you ready? You want the noise brought on you? Because here it comes.
What?
The noise brought on you? Because here it comes.
This is my job.
Showtime. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Here we go. Ready.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Is this show getting more and more difficult for you to do?
That's gotta be it!
Jeff Lutz.
This isn't that hard.
There are so many great things to do with the human mouth. Why waste it on talking?
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Stand by for action.
Hello again, everybody. It is a Thursday edition of the Bob and Jeff Show on KFH Radio. I'm Bob Lutz, and today the big fella, Anthony, replacing Jeff. Jeff can't be replaced, but Anthony's going to give it a shot. Max Power, producing, engineering the show, 869-1240, the phone number. And I had a little sneezing fit right as we were going on the air. I looked over at you and saw your concern. Yeah. What was going through your mind?
Lord, don't let me have to do CPR.
From a sneezing fit? I hope. Is sneezing indicative of bigger trouble? You never know, I guess.
If you listen to the, what's that called? WHO? World Health Organization?
I don't.
Anything?
Not about sneezing. They've said that?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's on their list.
Wow. Well, every once in a while in my house, I get on a sneezing rampage. Like it lasts for 10 minutes. And I don't know why. And it just happens. I'm not a sneezer, per se.
Okay.
But once in a while, it just strikes me. And I can't stop.
Can't help yourself, huh?
Nope.
Well, you know what? Maybe they should make, I don't know, I might ruffle some feathers. Maybe they should make sneezing an event in the Olympics or make it a contest.
Maybe so.
Just like they have hot dog eating contests and they call it a sport.
I'm pretty good at it. all right. We are off and running. The big fella, Anthony N. We've got a good show for you today. Jalen Thompson from the Kansas City Star will be our guest at 2:45. We will talk about the Royals as the post-All-Star break part of the schedule is set to begin tomorrow. I don't really want to call it the second half because these teams have played well more than 60% of their games already. So it's a little unfair to say the second half, but it is the post-All-Star portion of the schedule. And we'll get Jalen to talk about what they might be looking at as the trade deadline approaches, what they've already done. They added a bullpen arm already, so we'll get with Jalen on that. At 3:25, Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, beat writer for the Chiefs. He's been a guest on our show for many years, going back to my time on the morning show. Adam's been on the show countless times, and I read the other day on his Twitter that this is his last year covering the Chiefs. He's been doing it for a long time. And I've always respected Adam and his work, and it'll be fun to talk with him. So he's coming up at 3:25 today. We'll probably try to get him on a little early. And then at 3:40 or thereabouts, Zach Bush, the coach of the Wichita State Aftershocks team in the TBT, of course, that tournament beginning tomorrow around the country, Saturday here in Wichita with four games, including the Aftershocks at noon.
I have a problem with that.
You don't like them playing at noon?
No, I do not like them playing at noon. Basically, they're the host school, the feature school. They should be playing in the 7 p.m. game. How did that, whatever they call themselves, Al Lawrence, Bill Street, whatever.
The Mass Street.
Yeah, the Mass Street boys. How they get the feature game? Come on,
I don't know. That's a good question, and I would say this. A Saturday in July.
At noon.
When it's hot, wouldn't you just as soon get out of the heat and go inside and watch the shocks, the aftershocks? Do you think the crowd will suffer? Being that it's played at noon, I guess under most circumstances, I would agree with you. But everybody's off work. Saturday afternoon basketball is now the norm in college basketball. There are very few Saturday night games anymore. So I guess I'm throwing a little wrench into your contention.
But my thing is, yeah, they do play noon college basketball games, and the key word is college basketball games. We're dealing with summertime, and most people have plans summertime at noontime, and it doesn't consist of going to a basketball arena. And I get it, it's the aftershocks. But I would say, I would even go as far as say flipping with the Wildcats.
You know, play at 2:30 or whatever.
I mean, 2:30 would be more kosher as opposed to a noontime. I mean, who does?
I'm trying to agree with you.
Well, go ahead and do
it.
I'm
not there yet.
Be like Nike. Just do it.
There's very little agreement on this show. You know that.
I know that, but if I can convert you, if I can be in my Baptist mode and convert you and lay hands on you.
How about this? I see your side.
All right. Is that good enough? That's good enough.
I understand what you're saying. I hadn't even thought of it.
Now we need people to call in.
Well, maybe.
I need people to be on my side.
You like that, don't you?
I would love that.
I understand where you're coming from. I do. I get it. Me personally, if I was going to go to the game, and I'm not, I won't because I've got a League 42 event Saturday. Okay. But if I was going to go to the game, I'd kind of like to go at noon and be done and go out and have a beverage afterwards and maybe then an early dinner somewhere and kind of make a day of it.
Man, this
or this good best, lemonade, isn't it?
It's the best beverage right here. I'm drinking on
it. It's a good lemonade.
This tastes like it's fresh squeezed.
Yeah, you know, that's what I do.
Man.
It's good lemonade.
Lutz lemonade.
But you could also stay and watch K-State, hang out. Now, I think it's a different session at night, so you'd have to get another ticket. But you could go to the doubleheader, the noon 2:30 doubleheader, watch two games, go out, have a dinner, and make a day of it.
And see, I think, me personally, here's another reason I think it would be better if they played the later game.
You see my side of it.
I see your side. But here's why I think it'd be more advantageous to play the later game. I mean, yes, the K-State crowd, they're going to be there. I get that. But you're looking at now they're up in the ante because if we want to host the next round, we have to outsell and have a better attendance than the Houston region.
No, so, that hasn't been a problem in the past.
I mean, Wichita State fans, they're going to show up. Don't get me wrong, but I just think that a lot of people have.
Well, we'll see. We'll have Zach Bush on coming up later in the show, and we'll see what he thinks.
316-869-1240.
Did that raise any eyebrows with Zach Bush? I don't know.
No. You know, it doesn't raise. I mean, when you start talking about raising eyebrows, I mean, we know Zach Bush. He's been doing what he's been doing. I also have a whole lot of questions because there's some history with the aftershocks. And I know they probably won't get answers, so I won't put them on. But I'll tee you off there.
Well, I can't wait to hear them.
All right.
Good. So last night, you know, there's not much happening in the world of sports. And thankfully, there was a WNBA game. And it was between Indiana and Dallas. Dallas has a terrible record. I did not see who won it. I watched a bunch of it, but I did not see the fourth quarter. Do you know who won it?
I actually believe the Dallas Wings pulled off.
Well, they were ahead for the whole game, but then Indiana really made a run and tied it, actually went ahead. So I'm not sure how that game finished up. But I watched a lot of it, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, here I am watching the WNBA.
That's good for you.
Maybe the first time in my life that I've really made a point to sit down and watch a good portion of a WNBA game. So that's interesting to me. And why am I doing it? Why am I doing it?
Caitlin Clark was on last night.
Yeah. And that may seem like, is that a good enough reason? By the way, Indiana lost that game, 101-93. Caitlin Clark, 24 points, 19 assists.
That means combined they put up 194
points. Yeah, they scored at will. And it was fun to watch. But Dallas is now 6-19. Indiana is 11-15. Would I have anything to do with a NBA game with two teams with that record? No. The simple answer is no.
I mean, bottom line is, if you want to be turned off of basketball, just watch Bronny James.
Well, now I don't know if I want to go there yet. I haven't watched him enough to.
Hey, I mean, the WNBA game, that game last night was probably more entertaining than watching Bronny James.
Well, maybe, but I wouldn't watch an NBA game that had two teams that were near the bottom of the league. But I'm watching the WNBA because of one reason. Because Caitlin Clark has vitalized, I won't say revitalized, because I don't know that the WNBA has ever been a vital part of the sports sector. But she's making it one.
Well, what I will say that I like about Caitlin Clark, outside of being on the court, is how she is handling the interviews and how she is not making it about herself. Now, let me put a disclaimer. I'm not saying Angel Reese is making it about herself, but I like how Caitlin Clark deflects and make it about the other players in the league that she has idolized growing up, including Diana Taurasi, who has been her biggest nemesis.
So bringing people to the WNBA is a big deal. Would you watch... Are you more inclined to watch the WNBA now?
Well, honestly speaking, I've been inclined to watch.
You have watched it in the past.
Yes, I have watched it in the past.
Well, you're a rare person.
I know. I like being rare.
So my point being, I watched a game last night between Dallas, which is in last place, and Indiana, which is in seventh place. Would I watch a game between New York and Connecticut, who are combined 39-10? I don't know that I would. And they're clearly the cream of the crop. Again, New York's 21-4, Connecticut 18-6. Would I watch a game between those two teams on a Wednesday night in my living room?
All right, I'll tell you what. I'm going to answer that for you. Yes, you would. And I'm going to tell you why. Were you entertained by the two teams that was on the bottom and they put a total of 194 points? Was it entertaining?
Yes.
Well, then, yes, I believe you will watch two teams at the top of the league. Because now...
Well, they play each other on the 24th of August, New York and Connecticut. I got to presume that game will be televised somewhere. They have good players. But I have not been a W. I'm not going to lie. I the summertime for me is not. I want to watch more basketball.
All right, let me ask you this question.
But with Caitlin Clark, maybe.
Let me ask you this question. Let's say the WNBA is playing during the same time as a UFL game, United Football League. What you going to watch? That football team, that football game,
depends,
or the WNBA?
I won't watch the UFL no matter what. So it would depend on the WNBA game. I am saturated by sports, okay? I spent my life immersed in it, covering it. So it's got to be real for me to really be enthusiastically watching a game. Last night I was enthused watching that game because you know why? The gym was packed.
Yeah.
They showed shots of the crowd, and so many of them, even in Dallas, this was a road game for Indiana, so many of them in Dallas were wearing Caitlin Clark shirts and signs, and she's absolutely captured the attention of sports fans across the country. This is a rare thing now. This doesn't happen often.
Right, and I'm going to tell you where it all started. It started at the college level, and see... That's the beauty of it all, because now when you break down the college game itself, and a lot of people say, well, I can't even follow that because I don't know nobody. Everybody know who Dawn Staley is. Everybody know who Gina Auriemma is. Everybody know about UConn. Everybody know about University of South Carolina. Everybody know about you know, go back to the past. They got a court in Tennessee named after Pat Summitt, where the men's play.
Right.
Matter of fact, it was said that Pat Summitt was so good, she probably could have coached the men's team and they would have won a national tournament. But you go to the past and you bring up names like Nancy Lieberman, Rebecca Lobo. Listen to me rattling off these names from the past. Even more current, Maya Moore, who played for the Minnesota Lynx, ended her career abruptly to free a man from jail who she's now married to.
And all those players are great. All of them. Right. You're mentioning a who's who of women's basketball, and yet very few people watch.
I'm a rare person. Remember?
For whatever reason, Caitlin Clark has captured the imagination of basketball fans and beyond, of just people. People enjoy watching her. They like watching her vision and her passing ability.
Right.
And the fact that she shoots three-pointers and she's got charisma.
From the half-court logo.
And everything about her game is unique. All those other players, yes, they were fantastic. They helped put women's basketball somewhat on the map. On the map. Caitlin Clark's had it cover the map. She's the most popular athlete. She may be the most popular athlete in America right now.
I think it's going to be very interesting because they have the All-Star game coming up this Saturday on the 20th. It is the Team USA versus Team WNBA.
I can't wait to watch it.
I can't wait to watch it either. But even more importantly is going to be the storyline within. Of course, Caitlin, she had a way of deflecting that and saying it shouldn't just be about her and Angel, but it should be about everybody else. But her and Angel Reese are going to actually be on the same
team. And Angel Reese has contributed to this popularity by being the antithesis of Caitlin Clark.
Right.
She's the villain in many people's eyes, but also a great player.
Right.
A generational type of talent. They just happen to both come along at the same time. And I think it's a mistake and short-sighted to diminish Angel Reese's role in all this.
I agree with you.
She is also a big reason that women's basketball has taken off. It's like Bird and Magic.
Bird and Magic, right. I mean, when you stop and think about it, though, what Bird and Magic didn't have that Angel and Caitlin have is the big nemesis, the big elephant in the room called social media.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure if we had social media back in those days and had all these chat rooms, I can probably guarantee you it would be just as toxic then as it is now.
Sure. And Bird would have been the villain, even though a lot of people loved him. But Magic was the guy that everybody gravitated toward.
Right. He was the
happy-go-lucky,
right.
Quiet, friendly assassin. Bird was more stoic and pointed in the way he played.
And the biggest trash talk.
Now, I love Bird. I was a Celtics guy during that era. Not a Lakers guy.
I couldn't stand the Celtics.
But, well, there you go.
But the thing is, after hindsight is always 20/20, when you hear the stories about Bird from his contemporaries outside of Isaiah Thomas, because he, I don't know where he got that, if he was a, you know what he said. But there was a particular story, since we done brought this up. Larry Bird was talking trash, and Larry Bird could talk trash without being demeaning and derogatory.
But he could also be demeaning and derogatory.
But that's the thing. They said he wasn't like that. They said his trash talking was clean. He said, this is what I'm going to do, and you're going to come within a step of me, and I'm going to shoot a three-pointer right in your face. That's what he did to Magic. And then after he made the shot, he said, I don't even know why you came out here.
Right. That's Larry Bird.
And that's how the WNBA should market.
But we're still watching the personalities of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese develop. Angel Reese, not so much. Her personality is fully blown. We're seeing how Caitlin Clark's reacting to going to the WNBA, being pushed around early on in her WNBA career, players testing her. I think she's passed with flying colors. I couldn't be more impressed with her, and I can't wait to watch her career. I'm a big Caitlin Clark guy. And I hope the other teams are able to latch on to that, her popularity, and become more popular too. Like right. I just said, when New York plays Connecticut, clearly the two best teams. I hope those ratings are high too.
Right. And here's the thing, because, you know, I talk to people, they say, I don't watch this stuff. They say, who watches that? I forget who it was. Antonio Brown, he came out with some boneheaded stuff. We ain't going to mention that. But he says, he basically said, nobody watches it. Well, numbers don't lie. A year ago, when they had All-Star voting, the top vote getter was like, what, 90-something thousand votes? This year, fan voting increased not 10%, not 20%.
Right.
And you say 636%. So that would tell me, you could say, ain't nobody watching. But based on those numbers,
more eyeballs.
Somebody's watching because Caitlin got over 700,000 votes, and the lowest vote getter was Angel Reese at 300 and something thousand.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about the Open Championship currently underway. About to wrap up the first round over at Royal Troon, although one of the guys right there at the top is still on the course. Or can they? Good grief, it's after 8 o'clock over there. Maybe they're still playing. We'll talk about the Open Championship next. The big fella Anthony in for Jeff today. This is the Bob and Jeff Show on KFH.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Shane Lowry, the early leader, the first round leader,
yeah.
Over at Royal Troon. I think they've suspended play with some golfers still out there, including Daniel Brown, who I know nothing about.
I don't know nothing about
through 13 holes, he's four under, so just a shot back. Jeff and his picks picked Shane Lowry yesterday.
You mean he got something right, huh?
Well, so far. I picked Xander Schauffele, who's two under, and those are really the only two guys. Brooks Koepka, one under, picked him. I did. Scottie Scheffler, one under. I also picked him. So while he has the leader, I have the better picks so far, very early in the process.
I might need to do FanDuel fantasy picks and have Jeff help me with my picks.
Jeff is no good at picks. Do you like golf?
I'll watch it. I can't watch it all the way through. Just like I
can watch some majors all the way through.
Just like I can't watch a baseball game all the way through, not at home. Now, you get me to the ballpark, it's a different ball game.
Every Cardinals game I tune into, I watch from the first pitch, usually until the last, unless they're getting blown out.
Of course, I do find myself when I'm at home watching the baseball game pretty much all the way through. Because I got Hulu Plus, so, you know, I get to get games. And it's unique because you can get both broadcasts. If you don't like normal broadcasts, go to the other team.
I got that.
So.
I got that. Major League Baseball's schedule for 2025 released today. And I was checking the Cardinals. And they're on the West Coast in San Diego and L.A., in early August, and there was a time in my life where that would have been a no-brainer. I'm going to go to San Diego, then I'm going to go to L.A., and I'm going to watch several games that the Cardinals are playing on the West Coast. At my age now, it still looks appealing, but I'm not sure I can pull it off.
You know what my dad used to say in his latter years? He said, I'm like the rooster. I don't crow like I used to.
There's a lot of truth to that. But it's sad, Anthony. You're not there yet.
Hey, but I feel that, though.
Yeah, but you could muster it up and go to the West Coast. And watch. You don't think so?
If I did, I'd have to fly out there because I sure ain't going to drive there.
No, I'm going
to
drive.
And I'm not even big on flying, but I think I'd have to fly because...
No, I love driving.
I mean, I would love to drive, too. I mean, my parents, we... drove it. We drove to Las Vegas. We drove to Washington, D.C. We drove to Wyoming. I mean, we took trips and
there's nothing like embarking on a road trip.
Right.
Now,
I just don't know
four or five hours in, it starts to get, what in the hell? Of, I get it.
Yeah.
But you can get through that and enjoy the drive.
Right.
With all the modern amenities now in vehicles, you can listen to podcasts, music, basically anything you want. You can watch things. Your passengers can. I wouldn't recommend that for
the driver. No.
but it's like being at home in many ways. The seats are comfortable. The driving is where it's at.
I would need a driver's seat that has a massaging element in it.
They make those.
Now, I don't know if that'd be a good thing for a driver either, because that massage gets the feeling too good and the temperature.
No, I hear you. But the driving isn't even daunting to me. It's that being gone that long with our dog. First of all, I looked over here. She's not down here. She's upstairs today with my wife, who's working from home. It would be tough to leave our dog for that long. And then just navigating a trip like that.
Get a kennel and take the dog
to Southern California. I did it in 2017. And drove, and it went well. But it's no picnic driving in that state.
Mm-mm. No, no. Mm-mm.
But, man, I have a connection that I know I could get tickets to the San Diego series. I've wanted to do it for several years and just haven't pulled it off. And maybe next year's the year.
Well, I tell you, if you got connections and if you can't make it, give me the tickets. That'd be like around, let me see. It'd be after my birthday, but it'd be a belated birthday gift for me.
So you would go to Southern California?
I would go. I would go.
All right. Well, there you go.
Put that on the agenda for next year.
Well, if you go, I'll go.
Okay.
When's the last time you were in California? Mine was 2017.
Mine's would have been, let me see. My daughter, it was back in the 90s because we had a family reunion in Prim, Nevada, which is like dab smack on the California-Nevada line. So Daddy said, y'all want to go to California? So we left out of Whiskey Peaks Resort Hotel.
Well, does that even count? But yes, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, so we was in the state of California.
Okay.
It counts.
All right, I'll count it. I'll give it to you. I was just sitting here thinking. I retired from the Wichita Eagle in 2017, late April.
Retired?
You don't the Wichita Eagle.
You don't look that old to retire.
Well, I was 62. I left to devote my time to League 42. And I'm trying to think. I've been to Kansas City, Missouri a few times. I'm not sure I've been anywhere else out of the state since 2017. Isn't that something?
That's something.
No, I've been to Colorado. Maybe. No, I think I was in Colorado before that. I don't think. No, I was in Nebraska to see the Eagles.
Okay. Nebraska.
Now, that might be it.
Well,
I used to go all over the place, and now I'm a homebody.
Well, I wish I could say that, but I know. Even within the past couple of years, I've been to Oklahoma a few times, went to Las Vegas for our honeymoon back in 2022.
Wow.
Went to...
Wait a minute. You got what? Give me more information.
Yeah, I got married October 2022. We went to Las Vegas, stayed there.
Well, congratulations.
Stayed there on Fremont experience. Oh, that's an experience, too.
Did you see him knock down the Frontier Hotel? Did you see the video of that?
I didn't even get to see that. I wasn't even aware of that. So you told me something.
Well, all these things come up on Twitter, X. I'm going to call it Twitter.
Right.
So they always have these videos of these. And the Frontier Hotel is a legendary hotel in Las Vegas. But every few years, they tear down a hotel. Now, this year, they're not only tearing down the Frontier, which already happened, the Mirage is going to be taken down.
Oh.
And I remember when the Mirage was the place in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's coming down. It's amazing to me how that stuff happens.
Right.
The Mirage was a state-of-the-art, beautiful hotel. I stayed there once, and it was unbelievable. And now they're, apparently it's outgrown its usefulness.
Well, you got, like, the Stratosphere. Have you ever been up in there?
I have not. I haven't been to Vegas for even longer.
Gotcha.
So my last trip to Vegas was 2005.
Man, the Stratosphere, I believe that's one of the tallest buildings in America now. Probably in the world.
I feel like I've been everywhere I'm going to be, for the most part. And I was fortunate enough to visit so many different states and cities due to my job, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have that longing to travel a whole lot.
Right.
But it is appealing to think about sitting in the ballpark in San Diego next July when it's 100 million degrees here, and it'll be significantly cooler in that in San Diego, and watching the Cardinals. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see if I do it. I don't usually do exciting, fun things anymore, but maybe I'll pull it off.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's on my bucket list, and I hope I get to do it soon before they decide whatever they're going to do. I want to sit in Kauffman Stadium and enjoy a ball game.
Well, it's 3 hours from here.
Right. I haven't done that yet, but I've seen the stadium, but I want to sit inside.
This is one that I'm going to say, make it happen. Get online, get tickets, and go up and watch a couple games in Kansas City. Hang out in the plaza. Go to dinner, stay for at least 2 days, 2 nights, watch at least 2 games, and enjoy the experience.
I'm going to have to do that.
I'm going to find the games for you to go to.
Well, I'm going to have the financial backing. I just went back to work a couple of weeks ago.
You got so much money. It's crazy.
I hear my wife says the same thing, and I'd be like, well, y'all get these misconceptions from. That's how rumors get started.
Open their next part of the schedule. They actually have a 6-game homestand starting tomorrow night against the White Sox, then the Diamondbacks, then they go, they have the Cubs. So a 9-game homestand through the 28th of July at Kauffman Stadium. Here's your chance. Then Friday, August 9th, Saturday, August 10th, they are at home against the Cardinals. You could go up for that series.
Well, I tell you what, anybody listening, my birthday tomorrow, if y'all want to cash at me.
Oh, my gosh. Sound like Jeff. Here is Jalen Thompson, who was nowhere near anything in 1974. Jalen, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. Awesome.
What year were you born?
1995.
Oh, my goodness. They would have considered me an old man then. That's how old I am. Let's talk about the Royals. They had certainly a better-than-anticipated pre-All-Star break record. It's been a little bit hit-and-miss of late, but they're still in a good position to at least get into the postseason, still within several games of the Cleveland Guardians in the American League Central. They have a soft landing to restart against the Chicago White Sox starting tomorrow night at Kauffman Stadium. What do you think the Royals are right now?
I think the Royals are right in the thick of things, like you mentioned before. When you look at this team, no one thought that they were going to be at 52 wins at the All-Star break. They won 56 games last year, so to really look at it from a 1,000-feet perspective, they're in a really good place to try to push for what they want, which is a postseason berth. The thing that's going to have to happen is they're going to have to continue to get good pitching from guys like Seth Lugo, Cole Reagans, Michael Wacha, Brady Singer, Alex Marsh, and they also have to get some offense. It's been hard to come by this year. We've seen it. If it's not named Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, or Vinny Pasquantino, The lineup really hasn't produced like it needs to produce. So I think that's where it's going to have to be. If Rubber is going to meet the road and the road to make the playoffs after 9 years, pretty much, they got to get it done now.
Yeah, this is Anthony with the Bob and Jeff Show. I'm looking at the pitching matchup. We have Chris Flexen for the Chicago White Sox comes in with a 2-8 record, 4.82 ERA, going up against Michael Wacha, 6-6, 3.83 ERA. Now, one of my big things about the Royals is they have to win these games, win these series that are winnable, and steal some away from some that might not be winnable. But how do you break down tomorrow night's pitching matchup?
Hey, Anthony, I think that the Royals have to really lean on that veteran presence. You mentioned it. You said Michael Wacha is going to be out there and he's going to get a chance to pitch. He knows how to pitch in this back half of a season. You know, he's been there before. And I think it's a good veteran just to have to lean on. When you're coming off of an all-star break, you might be a little rested, but, you know, you haven't swung a bat in a couple of days. You haven't thrown a ball really in a couple of days. He knows how to go out there, deal with that kind of adversity of just coming and getting back into it and really putting you on a good footing. So I think that that'll be key for him. And he's facing the White Sox. The White Sox have not had a good season so far, but they're still formidable. They're still an American League Central team that you have to keep an eye on. And they're wanting to come in here and they want to beat their rivals in the Royals. So it's going to be a good matchup for sure.
Talking with Jalen Thompson from the Kansas City Star, the Royals begin the second half of the season tomorrow at the K against the Chicago White Sox, followed then at home by Arizona and the Cubs. So right now the Royals have three players with 60 or more RBIs. They had four All-Stars. This has been a kind of a dream season for Kansas City. They acquired some bullpen help right before the All-Star break, getting Hunter Harvey from the Washington Nationals, kind of getting the first strike before the trade deadline. What else do they need to do? What do they still need? Another bullpen arm? Could they fortify their rotation? An outfield bat? Those are all things that maybe come to mind.
Yeah, and with MJ Melendez going on the injury list, that really causes the team to probably need to think about, do they want to go out there and be more aggressive in adding an outfielder that can add that depth to the lineup? Because we don't know how long MJ might be out with his injury. You also got to look at the rest of the lineup as well. You've seen Michael Garcia bounce from third base. He's played second sometimes. He's led off. He's batted seventh in the order. They have a leadoff hitter that can really be there and help get on base for the likes of, like you said, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, that have those 60 RBIs. So maybe they might look to see if they want to add there, find someone that can lead off. Maybe they want to add another bullpen arm. You know, getting one in Hunter Harvey is nice, but you're going to need someone else to kind of help fortify things down there, because when you look at the entire group as a whole, you really don't have anyone that can strike someone out when you need it. You have guys that can get out relying on contact, but when you're playing these close games and you're trying to fight for a playoff spot, sometimes contact is not what you want. You want 1, 2, 3 strikeout, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and we'll see you next day. And the Royals really don't have that. Maybe Hunter Harvey can be that. He has electric stuff, but they might need something else to go alongside that.
Right now the Royals 2 games out of the wild card chase. Anthony?
Yeah, more questions. As I'm looking at some of the rankings here, looking at the White Sox, they are a 220 batting average team, which ranks 29th. The Royals, 247, which ranks 11th. On base percentage, .282 for the Sox at coming in at 30th. The Royals at .306 at 20th. Just overall, how much do rankings really, or how much do these stats really mean in the grand scheme of things when it comes to Chicago White Sox versus the Kansas City Royals? We know that the White Sox have a terrible record.
They're terrible. They're awful.
Right. In my Charles Barkley voice, they're just terrible. But does it mean anything when it comes down to this series? Because even when you look at the home runs, the White Sox, 85, 28, the Royals 101-17. So
means the Royals better sweep them, right?
Which Jay? Means it looks like the Royals could just break out the brooms. But what? Just tell me what to expect from this series.
When you look at this series with the White Sox, you have to keep in mind that they know the Royals very well, and the Royals conversely know them very well. They play so many times throughout the year. So when you look at the numbers between both sides, yes, the White Sox has not had a good season by their own estimation, but they're still major league hitters. They still know how to come in here to Kauffman Stadium and really compete. And if the Royals aren't careful, they could maybe lose a game or maybe two in the series. And that's not how you want to start off your second half of 2024. You really look at what the White Sox have. They have Luis Robert. He's back. They have guys like Tommy Pham. They have good pitching. We've seen Gary Crochet in the All-Star game. You know what he can do. They have Eric Fetty, who's really been revamping this year as a starting pitcher. So they have a couple of pieces. And like I said, they know the Royals. So you can't just come in there and think, oh, we're going to just sweep and that's all we can do. The Royals will have to fight these games this weekend against the
White Sox. I'm going
to
intervene here because that's what I do. If they don't sweep the White Sox, they're in trouble. And especially since they don't face Fetty or Crochet this weekend. They're off the hook. So, listen, I call it like I see it. The White Sox are horrible. And they're not throwing their two guys against the Royals. And sorry, Jalen, that's kind of where I come from. You're in agreement,
oh,
aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, all I can do is just go to the game. I'll let you say that. But, you know, it's going to be a good series.
No, it's not. But, I love you. You know I love you. Let's talk about this division. Cleveland currently 4.5 games up on Minnesota. Cleveland hit a bump in the road a little bit. The Twins have been a little erratic, although when they get hot, they're a very dangerous team. The Royals are 7 games over 500. These are obviously teams that are going to try to buy at the deadline. Winning the division is what all of these teams are after. That's a lot of fun because we haven't had that in the American League Central all that much of late. It's great to see 3 teams that are going to try to outdo each other in the final 65-70 games of the season.
Yeah, and if you go back to earlier this year, before the season started, what was the one thing that everybody was talking about? Well, the American League Central is the weakest one, and they might not have anyone reach 80 wins, and you just didn't know what you were going to expect. And now you have 3 teams that are truly competing for a playoff spot and are in a great position to potentially get that. And I think it just goes to the talent that's in the division. And like you said, the Royals have played well against some of these teams. Like, they play well against the Guardians. They still struggle a little bit with the Twins. And I think that's just given that it's the pitching that the Twins have. And I don't know what really makes it difficult against them. But, the Royals, if they want to win, if they want to make it to where they want to go in the postseason, they have to get through the Guardians and the Twins. There's no way around it. The guys in the clubhouse know that. They've said that. They know that is going to be the ticket to get there. And, you know, I also caution them to not look too far away from the wild card as well, because the Boston Red Sox are right there. Houston Astros are right there. So it's going to be pretty good these next upcoming weeks. So it might be a little bit of an arms race to see who's going to add it, who's going to really take that step forward at the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. The home stretch begins tomorrow night across Major League Baseball. For the Royals, they have the very dangerous Chicago White Sox visiting Kauffman Stadium. How's that? Jalen, it's always a pleasure. We love having you on. Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Can't wait to talk to you again.
All right, Jalen Thompson, one of the nicest guys I know. You're one of the nicest guys I know.
Thank you.
The White Sox are just an awful team. And the Cardinals lost 2 of 3 to them earlier this season. They had to face Fetty and Crochet. The Royals don't. And, you know, it's so much about pitching and who you're going to face. Certainly the White Sox on a given day when those two guys are pitching could be dangerous. Not so much this weekend.
So that's how they got barely 27 wins, right?
The Royals better sweep this series. You can't afford losses to the bad teams when you're trying to get to the places that the Royals are trying to get to. That makes sense?
I have a promotion. Royal sweep, everybody go to Walmart and get a free broom.
There you go. You going to buy them? You going to call Walmart and...
No, they had to feed it on them.
All right, there you go. Hour number one in the books. We got an action-packed hour number two. Adam Teicher, ESPN.com, will join us at 3:20, 3:25, somewhere in there, to talk about the Chiefs. Zach Bush, the coach of the Aftershocks, will be our guest in our final segment. Back in a moment, the big fella Anthony is in today for Jeff. This is the Bob and Jeff Show on KFH.
Radio you can touch.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Who the hell are you? I'd rather go down to the barber shop and ask a guy about ready to get his hair cut what the urgency's like.
Lord knows we need family now more than ever.
Jeff Lutz.
I just don't want to indulge you, and I'm the greatest thing in the world every time we're on the show. I'm not going to do that.
You're unbelievable. Judas.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
It's showtime, baby. You'll go wacko, but bananas, nuts, crazy, unbelievable.
Are you ready? Let's go!
We are back. Hour number two, the Bob and Jeff Show on KFH Radio. I'm Bob Lutz. In today for Jeff is Anthony, the big fella, making his fourth appearance, I believe, if I'm counting correctly.
You might be right. I'll trust your judgment.
Tomorrow, it will be Jeff and Jason Duda on the airwaves, as I will be absent. So not as good a show tomorrow, but hey,
that could be
we'll
scary.
Be back Monday.
Do you ever hear how bad they talk about you when you're not here?
No, I don't. I don't listen.
You don't listen?
What do they say?
It's not good. You might want to listen.
Really?
I can't repeat some of the stuff.
Duda even?
Man.
Well, that hurts. That's one of my boys. Oh, well.
I mean, Duda, he tries to deflect, but I mean, he pretty much just gets out the way and let Jeff have his way.
Whatever they want to do. It's fine with me. 869-1240, that's the IHOP hotline. We welcome your participation on, again, one of the slowest sports days of the year. This might be the slowest. Last night I had a WNBA game, at least. I don't think I got anything tonight. No.
Quiet whispers. The crickets.
We had the open, but it's done for the day. And so there's nothing on TV. I don't know what I'll do. Saturday, we've got the Team USA WNBA All-Stars at 7:30 on ABC.
I plan to watch that.
Sure. We're going to watch that.
Right.
For sure. Who's on those teams?
Let me see. I believe that on Team USA, I believe they have Asia Wilson, I believe, Brittany Griner, Diana Taurasi, some of the, I'm not going to say founding members, but some of the members that's been there for a long time. Of course, we know on the WNBA All-Star team, of course, it starts with Caitlin and Angel Reese. And
in all my years of doing radio, and there's been a bunch of them now, I don't recall talking, I don't recall talking about the WNBA until this year. I just don't recall ever mentioning it, anything happening in the WNBA that caught the attention of a national audience. And that's not to say there haven't been great players. But for whatever reason, it just wasn't something on my radar.
I actually used to have a crush on Rebecca Lobo.
Really? And I know who Rebecca Lobo is. I watched her in college. But when she got to the WNBA, here's what happened in the rare instances when I would tune into a WNBA game, in a rare instance that it was even televised.
Mm-hmm.
Not usually televised. I would see nobody in the stands and no energy, and it just wouldn't captivate me.
And I think those narratives have changed.
Well, sure they have.
I mean, you talk about the people that flocked to the games and got the Caitlin Clark jerseys on, but attendance has been up even at other venues where there's not Caitlin Clark. I mean, when you look at the Chicago Sky, I believe they're averaging like close to 10,000. I mean, you get 10,000 for a game where before you was probably only getting 4,500. That's an uptick right there. A lot of teams are seeing upticks in their attendance. Now, I don't know what it was like last night seeing two teams on the bottom.
Well, they had a great crowd.
If it was Indiana, it was like tomorrow, my wife is going to take me to go see the movie Twisters. It's going to be must-see TV when Indiana's on.
So here's an example, and I looked this up. Atlanta, which is 7-17, played a game at Minnesota, which is one of the best teams in the WNBA, at 17-8. They played this game the other night, and it drew 15,000 people. That never happened.
See what I'm saying? Hey, now, let's add this.
That never happened.
Let's add this. You say there was 15,000, and Caitlin Clark wasn't nowhere on the court, was she?
No. That was last night.
Last night.
Let me look up a random game, Seattle and Los Angeles, which was played Tuesday night. Okay?
Okay.
This game was played in L.A., the Sparks and the Storm. And these teams were Seattle good, 17-8. The Sparks bad, 6-18, a home game for the Sparks. The crowd was announced at 18,000. Is that right?
They're drawing more than the men's.
Is that right? That can't be.
If it said it, it's true.
that astounds me.
And yet you will hear people say, I don't watch that. Somebody's lying. The numbers don't lie.
I'm checking another random game, okay? Chicago at Las Vegas.
Angel Reese.
Played on the 16th.
The defending WNBA champions.
Las Vegas, the home team. The game was won by Chicago. They're 10-14. Vegas at home, 16-8. The crowd, 10,396.
That's believable.
Does everybody just... Okay, here's Connecticut at New York. We talked about these two teams earlier.
Right.
They're the two best teams. They just played Tuesday night. New York won 82-74 at home. Again, they're fighting it out for the top spot in the WNBA. That game drew 13,694.
Somebody is watching. They're either going or they're watching.
What happened? Caitlin Clark happened. Angel Reese happened. The talk about women's basketball has elevated. They're getting their due. And when people tune in to watch now who weren't watching before, they like the product. Very much. They may like the product better than they like the men's product.
Well, let's just go back to the NCAA tournament, men and women's, and look at the viewership, the ratings. The women outdid the men not once but twice in a row.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Here's where not being a sports columnist bothers me, because this is something I would have grabbed onto. I would have looked back at last year and what the average attendance was. I don't really have time to do that right now. I may try to do it at the break. Average attendance for the WNBA. But it's a little harder to do, right? Las Vegas last year was 34-6. I wonder what their average attendance was.
I'm pretty sure whatever you said their attendance was in their game last night, it would probably be hovering around that mark. I would say at least 8,000.
Average attendance right now this year is 9,311, which is the best attendance since the 1990s. Average attendance by team this year. Atlanta, only 4,600. So it's not, for whatever reason, Dallas, 6,000, although they had a packed house last night. Washington, 6,700. Indiana, almost 17,000. With a below 500 team because of Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
New York, 12-7. Las Vegas, 11-1. Los Angeles, 10-9. Seattle, 10-6. Phoenix, 10-4. Chicago, with Angel Reese, 8,719. Why hasn't she elevated that Chicago crowd?
Well, if you look at their attendance this year and look at their attendance last year, I'm pretty sure it has elevated.
Okay, so here's 2024, right? That's what I just read. 2023, nobody averaged 10,000.
Exactly.
No team averaged 10,000 in 2023. This year, six teams are averaging 10,000. Indiana last year averaged 4,000 fans. They've elevated to almost 18,000.
Right. And can I tell you something? It's going to get better. And I'm going to tell you why it's going to get better. Because now people are starting to even watch the college game. If you want to say, it even goes down to the high school level, because I'm going to pick on Derby, for instance. When their season was over, a group of them hopped on the bus, went to check out Iowa State, Addie Brown. Now we're starting to know them like we know the guys. So we know them from a local level. We know them once they get to the college level. Now they're getting ready to go to the WNBA. Now we're starting to know them, which is mean there's going to be more viewership. Because
maybe.
Now we can relate to them because we know them now.
I get it, but I'm just going to say it. This is largely based on one player.
It may be largely based on one player, but now we're going to start.
Bringing eyeballs to other players. Maybe that will be beneficial. Obviously, it will be beneficial to the league. But for Indiana to go from 4,000 per game to 18,000 per game, that's nuts. And they don't even they're not even a contender. Imagine what they're going to have to build a new arena when they get really good.
Well, I even look at it like this. For a minute, they started out the season, they were like 2-9, 3-9, and people were like, oh my God. Why come? She's supposed to be the savior of the team. Matter of fact, when you look at their fanfare, when she got introduced, they rolled out the red carpet, had all the kids there, had all the bloom, the pomp and circumstances. Angel Reese was the number 7 pick, and when they introduced her, outside of some media credentials and the coaching staff, that's all she had. The difference was Caitlin Clark is supposed to be the savior.
There was a game last year where the Indiana Fever at home had 2,400 fans.
That sounds like one of those Major League Baseball teams in Florida.
They never had more than 7,300 all last year. This year, their lowest crowd has been 15,022. Remarkable. It's just amazing to me. And we're witnessing something that in sports is unique, doesn't come around very often. And I applaud it. I think it's great. I like watching the WNBA, not like I'm in front of it every night. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to pretend. I'm not going to embellish. But I'm more likely now to watch a WNBA game. I guess you can't go from never watched it. And I never watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm watching it. Not every night.
It's captivating.
But I'll watch it.
It piques your interest.
Will I watch it when Caitlin Clark doesn't play? I'm going to give it a shot.
You will.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Next thing you know, you'll be calling me up saying, hey, buddy, let's go have an adult beverage or a beverage of your choice. Let's meet up at a bar. WNBA game is on.
I'll figure it out. Sad news, Bob Newhart has passed away at the age of 94. one of the all-time greats, comedians.
Right.
One of the great television personalities to ever live. And Bob Newhart has died at the age of 84. So we wanted to pass that along. Certainly sad news. We'll take a break now and come back and visit with Adam Teicher from ESPN.com. He's covered the Chiefs for a long time. This is going to be his final year doing that for ESPN.com. We'll get Adam's update on what's going on in camp with the Chiefs and what's going on with him. Stay with us.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
We have Adam Teicher from ESPN.com. We're going to talk about the Chiefs. Adam, I didn't mention anything in my text to you about you deciding that this is your last year of covering the Chiefs, but I just want to commend you for an amazing run, and it's been our pleasure, my pleasure, to have you on the show as often as we've had you, and just congratulations, man.
Well, thanks. It's been a heck of a run. I mean, it's been a wild ride, and it's hard to believe, you know, where the Chiefs were just a few years ago, you know, in the 2010s and the early 2010s, where they were and where they are now. It's hard to imagine they've become the franchise everybody else wants to be like. So it's been fun to have a kind of a front row seat for that. And to kind of see all that happen and be able to chronicle it more or less on a daily basis. And, I've always enjoyed going on with you, Bob. So it's been a lot of fun. And sorry to in a lot of ways that it's coming to an end because I'll miss it. But time to move on to some other stuff at the end of this season.
Well, I got to ask because I'm a curious sort, and I've certainly followed your career and at times that we've shared a press box together at Arrowhead Stadium, but what does it look like? What do you think you might do now?
Well, my wife and I are building a place out in Colorado, believe it or not. So wow. We're going out there, and we're going to be moving out to Colorado, and so we'll be doing a lot of biking and hiking and playing in the snow, and might have a couple beers now and then, and a couple glasses of wine now and then, and got some friends out there, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We're definitely looking forward to it.
All right, Adam Teicher, I guess that sounds obviously tremendous. So let's talk about the Chiefs. Training camp underway up at Missouri Western in St. Joseph, Missouri. The Chiefs, of course, as everybody knows, chasing a third consecutive Super Bowl, which has never been done. What are the question marks in the camp? And with a team like this, you have to look a little bit to find them, but every team does have them. What are they trying to answer in this training camp, Adam?
Well, the one emphasis they've made is trying to get the big play back in their passing game, and so we'll see if they were successful at that or not. Xavier Worthy is fast, and you know, can he help? Provide some of those big plays. He didn't practice much during OTAs and in the mini camp, so hard to get a much of a read on him there. So, he's been out there working the last couple days. So, see what kind of impact he has. You know, Hollywood Brown is obviously brought in to help with that, but. You know, will Rashee Rice be able to play a full season? What is his impact on that? So, it's definitely going to be an interesting situation in terms of, how that plays out and whether they can get back to having a passing game more like we know the Pat Mahomes Chiefs having rather than what we saw last year. I just don't know that they can have as offense as inconsistent as what they had last year and achieve what they did last year. I think that's going to take I think that's going to be a big ask for them. So I'm really eager to see whether they can improve offensively and for a change, take some of the pressure off what they're doing defensively.
Yes, Mr. Teicher, this is Anthony. And you mentioned the two names, Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice. And let's just address that, because it's looking possibly as if Rashee Rice might not play the whole season. So how much pressure is going to be on Xavier Worthy? And who are some of the other receivers in the receiver room that they can maybe kind of cover up, so to speak? Because, I mean, that's a lot to put on an incoming rookie.
Oh, no, it is. But, you know, the Chiefs are doing that themselves. I mean, Pat Mahomes, you know, when he showed up for camp the other day, was asked about Worthy, and he said, hey, there's going to be no easing him in. We need him now. And he's right. They do need him now. So you're right. I mean, whether it's fair or not, Anthony, they're going to ask Xavier Worthy to play a big role and not necessarily be the number one receiver or carry a huge load, but he's going to have to chip in. And, you know, you're right about Rice. He may not make it through a whole season. And if he doesn't, they've got Hollywood Brown, who they signed as a free agent. He's going to have to be a big part of this too. There's no doubt. And if Xavier Worthy doesn't answer the bell, I mean, if he's not what the Chiefs hoped he can be as a rookie, and if Hollywood Brown doesn't have a big season, it's going to be difficult for the Chiefs to really achieve. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on both those guys, because as we know, the wide receiving group was really disappointing last year, and the Chiefs need help from both those guys this year.
Adam Teicher is our guest from ESPN.com, longtime Chiefs beat reporter. Last year we made a big deal out of the strength of schedule for the Chiefs, and it turned out to be a difficult schedule, and they stubbed their toes some along the way during the regular season. Now, this also looks like certainly a challenging regular season schedule, as best we can surmise, given the prognostication for some of these teams. Open at home against Baltimore, then at home against Cincinnati, on the road at Atlanta, and on the road at the Chargers. Is it fool's gold to try to make something of a schedule, or is it legitimate to look at?
Well, it's hard right now. I mean, we think we know about these teams, but we really don't. And you know, sometimes these things look difficult and don't turn out to be that way. Sometimes they look to be easy and turn out to be difficult. So I think you can't make too much of it. Certainly at the end of the season, you can look back and say, okay, this was a factor. An easy schedule was a factor for them, or a difficult schedule, whatever it might be. But I think right now it's all on paper, and you have to wait until the games are played and see who's available for which team and what things are looking like there. But it sure does look like a difficult schedule for them right now.
And I'll go again on paper. It's almost as if the Chiefs, and of course this is going to sound ridiculous, but the Chiefs aren't going to not win the AFC West unless something completely unforeseen happens. So they're basically playing the season for playoff seeding. Last year they showed that doesn't really even matter either, because they went on the road and won every game in the postseason. So the Chiefs are set, man. You're gonna be covering another team that's in the playoffs. How likely is it, Adam, that they can pull off this third Super Bowl in a row?
Well, since you're guaranteeing it, Bob, I'm going to go ahead and make my flight reservations to New Orleans right now. So if they don't go, you got to reimburse me, okay? Because ESPN won't cover it if the Chiefs aren't there. But, it's easy to look back at what the Chiefs have done over the last 8 years. They've won the AFC West 8 straight times, and you know, they've been to the AFC Championship 6 straight times now. And it's easy to look at that and say, well, it's going to happen again. And it's not that easy. And teams are really coming after them. And do I think the Chiefs will wind up in the Super Bowl again? I think they have a great shot, but I think there's some real danger in assuming things. And, you know, these things have to play out. I mean, there have been some of these years where some of the AFC West teams have really pushed the Chiefs in terms of the division race. It's difficult to see how that's going to happen this year, but you just don't know. And you know, so much change going on within the division, particularly in L.A. What can Jim Harbaugh do for the Chargers? What they've not been able to do the last few years. So I think this thing's going to be maybe more difficult for the Chiefs than a lot of people think right now. Not that I'm saying they're not going to make it or they have no chance or anything like that, but I think this is going to be a more competitive season for them than maybe a lot of people see right now.
Yeah, it could be, and I'm keeping an eye on quite a few teams in the AFC, but I think the Chiefs are in pretty good shape to get to the postseason. Adam, it's always our pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll catch up with you as the season approaches.
Hey, anytime, guys.
All right, Adam Teicher from ESPN.com. Zach Bush with us, the coach of the Aftershocks. They get it underway at noon Saturday at Coke Arena. So, Zach, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. I'm just leaving practice here. Just dropped a couple guys at the hotel and got some good work in today. So I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Well, we're good. I was told by my son that he's already asked you this question, and I was not aware of that. So my apologies for asking again. But we have a much bigger audience when he's not on the show. So
exactly.
This will be brand new.
So we got
to
ask it again. Yeah,
exactly.
I get it.
You understand. So you play Saturday at noon in your first game against another team here locally. Do you like the noon start, or do you wish you were playing the main event, so-called main event, that evening?
I despise the noon tip-off with every fiber of my being, and I would love the people with Wichita to know that I fought it and complained and moaned about it. And they said, sorry, you're one of our highest TV draws. We needed to get you on TV. The only slot we could do it was, 12, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, that's great, but we're the big dogs. We're the main show. We need to be the prime time 7 p.m., and it needs to be the KU or K-State right before us. And they don't listen to me. I got all the great ideas, but they don't want to listen to me. So I complained about it on behalf of you guys.
Anthony is correct, because I thought I didn't necessarily know what you would feel like, but if I was a fan and I had the opportunity to go watch you guys play at noon, hang around for the K-State game, go out, maybe have a little dinner or a couple beverages, that could make a full day of that. But you're not buying it.
Right. That's exactly – that was my plan too. And so I'm not the biggest fan of the way we've set up this year. But thankfully, the way the schedule plays out after this, I know it's not a weekend, but – at least after this, we're like a 7 p.m., 8 p.m. tip from here on out with, another game in front of us. So, I know, just bear with us for a Saturday, and hopefully we get by that one, and we can have some fun at night.
There you go.
Coach, I'm glad that you agree with me, because me and Bob, as a matter of fact, I almost thought I was his son there for a minute, because we didn't quite see eye to eye, but I told him 12 o'clock does not make no sense to me. So I got to ask you this question. I know you coach the Aftershocks, but do you do any other coaching outside of the Aftershocks?
I do. I've been a high school coach pretty much since I've gotten out of school. So almost, five, whatever it is. I'm getting old, man. It's happening fast. But five, 6 years
you ain't
now.
You scratch the surface.
But, yeah, so anytime we play, mid-season tournament, whatever, if we have the early game, every coach is the same way. We all look at each other like, oh, great, here we go. Like, something about just guys do not like playing at that time. And as a coach, you hate it. You hate watching your guys be a little lethargic, and they're trying to wake up, and the first half never seems like it's good. So hopefully that's not the case with us. But, yes, I do coach, and if that's where you were going with that question, yep, as a coach, I've hated it, whether it's the high school guys I coach, I hated it as a player. I hated the early games in AAU in high school. So I think it's pretty across the board. Everybody is not the biggest fan. But, it's the cards we're dealt, so we'll make the most of it. And hopefully we get the fans out there. At least this way, they get a full day of basketball still. They just get to start with the dessert,
There you go. The Pride of Goddard, Zach Bush, our guest, currently coaching high school basketball in Omaha. Maybe he'll find his way back here someday. We'll see. So tell us a little bit about, we're familiar with some of the players on your roster, certainly all of the former Shockers, but as is always the case, you've added some guys. Tell us about some of the newcomers and what we can expect from them.
Yeah, so two completely new guys that the fans have never seen. So last year, you know, we had Caleb Walker, who's, you know, a Kansas native, Hutch High grad, played at Butler for a couple years before playing in Nebraska. He played last year, so fans are should be a little familiar with him. You know, great guard, mature, veteran pro overseas. He played last year. And then Jordan Parks, who's a wing. He played with Marcus McDuffie in Italy a couple years ago. We had him last year. So then the two brand new ones are Jeremiah Martin, who's a Memphis grad. I know. Don't be too upset with me. Jeremiah is a stud, though. We've had our eyes on him for a couple years. He was absolutely torching us last year. He played with the Memphis alumni team, and not good for him, but good for us. He went down. He kind of tweaked an ankle, and he didn't finish the game. If he had finished it, I'm not sure we come out of there winning, but we were able to pick up Jeremiah because the Memphis team didn't end up playing this year. He's been awesome. He's kind of a co-lead guard with Connor. The lefty can really score it off the bounce. Had a really good year in Russia this year, which is a really high-level league. So looking forward to having Jeremiah. And then the other newcomer is Jabari Narsis. Jabari's a big man, played at UT Arlington, and has now been playing in Japan the last couple years in a good league over there. He's about a 6'9 big. Can stretch the floor and shoot it a little bit and hopefully give us some rim protection. But both really good dudes, and we're fortunate. Like, the fans have created such a great atmosphere that even the guys that come that didn't play here are always excited, and it's because of that. So we love that the fans wrap their arms around those guys and make them feel like honorary Shockers.
Coach, I'm elated that you got somebody from Memphis, because it seemed like here recently we've had a pipeline. We sent one back to Memphis who was basically like the coach's son. And then the past two seasons, we sent players to Memphis. So about time we get somebody from Memphis. And so I'm happy about that.
That was the brain behind the whole thing. I want you to expound on that. I was thinking that. It was just what you say. You know, I was thinking that the whole time. I've been scheming for years. How could I flip the script on him? And, you know, maybe this is the start of the new wave of Memphis to Wichita. You know, I don't know how thrilled the fans will be at first, but no, it's tough, man. Losing, you know, Colby this year is certainly, I think, leaves a sour taste in your mouth when he's, you know, arguably your best player. And I think the fans really enjoyed watching him, the way he shot the ball. Seems like a really good kid. I don't know him too well, but obviously frustrating. But hopefully, I think Coach Mills is going to turn a corner this year. Just having watched practice yesterday, I can say it definitely looks different than last year's practices. It's more competitive. The group they've brought in is more talented, and I know fans get antsy, but you always got to remember guys have to have time to recruit. And when they take a job, it's, you know, those bridges and, or excuse me, those relationships that they built, you know, with previous kids, they can't always bring those to, you know, Wichita State. And so you got to give him that full kind of 2 years to get his recruiting cycle going. And I think he's already going to prove this year that he can recruit and bring in some talent. Now we just got to keep it at home.
How important is it? We're talking with Zach Bush, the coach of the Aftershocks. How important is it? No player nationally is associated with this tournament more than Connor Francamp. How important is it for him to still be playing? I mean, I'm talking like he's ancient. He's 29 for crying out loud.
Right.
But to still be playing and still be contributing and still be a mainstay, not only on this team but in this tournament. How much does that mean to the TBT?
I think it means a lot. That's what builds TBT, is when you don't have just guys who play in it 1 year and then are done. Like Joe Johnson, you know, former NBA All-Star and, you know, long career, ends up playing a couple years ago. And those guys are cool, and they certainly add some hype. But I think what builds TBT and, you know, builds fandom is when you have these consistent guys that play year after year and that have a fan base, you know, that rallies behind them. And Connor has been that certainly for us and for TBT. I think fans maybe before that didn't know Connor have really come to know him through TBT. And, you know, he's been a beast in the Elam ending. It seems like the game plan usually is once we get to that Elam, all right, just get the ball to Connor and, you know, get out of the way, set a high ball screen and let him go to work. So he's been awesome. I think it's been a lot of fun for him. And I've, you know, said this in other interviews. Connor had such a, you know, great high school career, and then maybe college doesn't quite go the way, you know, he hoped it would, and maybe doesn't get to display who he truly was as a player and what he thought he could do. This has provided an awesome opportunity for him to come back and do that because, you know, guys are sensitive to that. They want the city to be proud of them. They want the city to think highly of them. And so, you know, when the word is like, well, man, you know, Connor just, he didn't live up to the hype. And then now he has this opportunity to come back and show how great he is as a professional and has really hit his stride. So I just, it makes me really happy for him. You know, he gets to do that because I know it means a lot to him, and just to play in front of his family again and show how great he's become.
And he was on the show yesterday, and I told him, and he admitted it before I even said anything, that he needs to be more aggressive, right? He needs,
yeah.
Last year he was a little passive, which is not his game. So absolutely. More aggressive Connor is a better Connor.
Yep, absolutely. He's the guy, you know, if there's anybody on this team that has the ultra, ultra green light and, you know, 20-plus field goal attempts, it's him. And that's what we tell him. Like, last year we felt like maybe the reason we still won, I mean, three games last year, which, you know, a lot of teams in the tournament didn't.
Right.
But we felt like we never really played well, especially offensively. And part of that was, you know, we talked with him this summer about, we need you to be the true you. And that's got to be a guy who's aggressive and is, you know, creating for himself and others. And when he's that guy, our team's dangerous. So he's had a really good last couple of days of practice, just even the weeks leading up to this. It's funny. He's, you know, sending me texts. Said, hey, I'm in the gym. I feel great. I haven't felt this good in 2 years. So, you know, hopefully that's, you know, a good sign of things to come.
Zach, we really appreciate your time. Get the boys in early tomorrow night. We got a game at noon, my friend.
Yes, sir. I will do my best. Good to talk to you guys.
All right. Zach Bush, coach of the Aftershocks. Anthony, always good. Thank you for being in today.
Thank you for having
good
me
to
in.
See
we
you.
Need to do this more often.
You bet. Good to have the Anthony in today. We'll be back tomorrow. It'll be Jeff and Duda. I'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend.